The Army's instituting a new evaluation system for determining who gets promoted. It will start to use its new non-commissioned officer evaluation report, NCOER, in 2016. The Army's fine-tuning it now and training personnel on how to use it. Sergeant Major of the U.S. Army Dan Daly is my guest on Pentagon Solutions today. He explains why the Army decided the new evaluation system is necessary and why the new one will bring the Army better leadership.
First and foremost, overinflation. To be blatantly honest, you know, so we had a very good evaluation system, and over time, it has become one that there's, there's equivalency in all ratings of non-commissioned officers throughout the force. And it makes it very difficult because the non-commissioned officer evaluation system is one that we want to use primarily to promote off of. You know, it demonstrates potential by past performance. What better than your personnel evaluation to do just that? So that was really our aim. Secondly, too, it was out of date. You know, so we've updated our doctrine recently. We did an extensive doctrine rewrite across the Army, and we had to put those back in perspective. What are the leadership attributes consistent with our Army leadership manual? So it also took the opportunity to do the same thing. And third is to drive the counseling process. Okay, so we always had the counseling process was an essential part of the evaluation system. But we truly wanted to drive it. So we wanted to make it essential part of the system rather than, you know, being able to just be able to produce a non-commissioned officer evaluation report at the end of the year. We wanted to say, you know, make it hard for people not to counsel. I mean, in all honesty. And I think we've achieved all of those. I do.
What's the reason for the emphasis on the counseling piece of that? What's the value that you've seen to soldiers receiving that, participating in that process that made you want to institutionalize it?
Yeah, because it's part of leader development. Counseling is an essential part of leader development because ultimately we don't want to just record behavior. We want to correct behavior, okay, or reinforce behavior. So those who have behavior that's not consistent with the duties, responsibilities, and authorities of their position or in keeping with the Army profession, you obviously would like to do, before there's any more extensive measures that have to be done, use counseling as a tool to correct that behavior. And in most cases, that works. And vice versa, too. If you have somebody that's doing an outstanding job, doing a phenomenal job representing the Army in the finest traditions of military service. You want to use a counseling tool to do just that, is to let them know that you're doing a phenomenal job. It helps the leader set expectations to the subordinate, and it gives them a clear understanding of that communication between the two individuals on what is expected and what I need to do. That's why it's so essential.
Does the new evaluation system require different measurements, or do you measure maybe different things in the same way that you have before?
I wouldn't say they're different. I just say from a doctrinal perspective, we've redefined and recategorized what those things are, but it's not different. I mean, it's the basic soldier standards that we're looking at. You know, it's the leadership attributes. Are the words different on the form? Yes, but they are now aligned with our doctrine. Staying with the old form would have made that inconsistent, and that new NCOER will make that consistent with our doctrine, our leadership doctrine.
You've already spoken a number of times in our conversation about doctrine. You're obviously influenced by your last tour of duty, sir.
Sure.
What do you bring from that job to this job as SMA? What do you think you have most to offer the soldiers that you're working with?
Yeah, I think TRADOC really prepared me to be the Sergeant Major of the Army, just like many other positions in the past, as well as there's a lot of leader development and soldier mentorship that prepared me for this position. But from a TRADOC perspective, it really gave me a different perspective than what I was comfortable with, what I've done throughout my career. As a career infantryman and primarily focused in the brigade combat team, I was, with some regards, blindsided. You know, I was focused on a mission. That's what I was supposed to do. Putting myself in the training doctrine command exposed me to the professional military education aspect of the Army. It exposed me to the broadening opportunities, the leader development aspect, gave me time to sit and focus and, you know, really focus my attention on it because as the TRADOC Sergeant Major, I was the Chief Staff of the Army and the Sergeant Major of the Army's enlisted education director for all intents and purposes. So it's really given me a whole different aspect of the importance those things have in the development of the non-commissioned officer.
You use the term Army profession, and I love that term. And I wonder what your hope is as you wrap up your tenure as SMA at some point. what that term means to the soldiers that you've worked with.
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked that. I mean, so, and I've talked with some before, and my public affairs and I have talked, and she said, hey, and she asked me a question one time. She says, what do you hope to achieve in your tenure? The reason why I use that example is because it is about the profession. You know, the United States Army is the most trusted organization in America. It's taken 240 years to earn that trust. It has waned at times. We have won it back, and that will happen again throughout cycles of history. My job is to ensure that our soldiers, non-commissioned officers, and our great leaders uphold the standards of the profession. And that is, this is a job made of professionals. And at the end of my tenure, that trust is even greater from the American people.
What's your view of the health of that profession as the men and women in the uniform look at it right now?
Yeah, I'd say we're doing good. We have challenges. We are. I'm going to be honest and forthright with that. We're a organization that's, because of its environmental factors, is asked to get smaller. And we're going to live in a world that's becoming more complex. So that is challenging. But I think our priorities are focused right. We got our new chief on board, General Milley, and his number one priority is readiness. It's about being ready, and that's our commitment to the American people. Ultimately, that's what we do. I have been, always will be, a very simple leader. What do soldiers do? They fight and win. And in order to do that, you got to be ready to do that. And, you know, many military scholars in the past have said, if you can demonstrate your potential, you most likely will never have to fight. That's what we have to win. That's winning. Being ready is winning. Because you win it on two fronts, because you deter your adversaries, and if necessary, you defeat them.
What kind of feedback have you gotten from the men and women in uniform that you've talked to since you've taken over as SMA? What's their level of confidence in what may or may not lie ahead of them career-wise as soldiers?
Yeah, they're very apprehensive. I mean, so, you know, as they should be. I mean, many of our young men and women want to make this a lifelong commitment. You know, they want to remain part of the profession, and they don't see clarity at the end of the tunnel as they thought they saw before in an army of 585 or 500,000, 450. We have to take measures in order to reduce the force. We're doing that from a standards-based approach. We're doing it responsibly. We're doing it better than I think we've ever done historically. And I've been through some of these drawdowns even throughout my career. But soldiers are asking themselves, you know, what do I have to do to stay? And I tell them it's consistent with the same things you had to do to join. And that is be part of the profession, maintain that professionalism, and be the best soldier you can. And we've got room for those soldiers who want to do that. We do.
I hear a distinction there that I appreciate as someone who enjoys words. And I heard you say that men and women want to make a career in the Army. They don't just want to do 20 years. That idea of a career is distinctive from, I just want to spend the time that I need to until I can retire and get out.
That's right. And I, of course, you know, there's we have goals and timelines that are associated, and there's monetary compensation values to those. But, you know, once you're in this, you realize that you're not in it for the money, and you don't. I mean, that's very easily said, sometimes hard to believe by an onlooker or someone that is entitled to form their opinion. But in truth, it is, because it's a career. I mean, our soldiers make sacrifices that no other profession in America makes, and that's okay. And I'm not comparing them to them, but that's ultimately what we want. We want somebody focused on what it is to be a soldier every day. Of course, we have to fight for the entitlements that they need in order to compensate and take care of their families just like every other hardworking American person out there. But ultimately, we want them to be able to, you know, look forward and say, I want to be a soldier. I'm here for the right reasons, and I'm here so I can achieve a state of which everybody else can live under.
What do you hear about compensation when you go out and talk to soldiers? Are they interested in what's going on Capitol Hill? Are they interested in seeing what plays out with the recommendations of the Comp Commission, that kind of thing? Or are they focused on their jobs and don't feel like they have much control over what goes on in those?
Yeah,
debates?
I don't think the concern has grown yet. The concern is there. It's subordinate to the one of the downsizing of the military, to be completely honest with you, largely because there hasn't been a whole lot of definitive talk on what those compensation changes will be and if there will be some. For the conversations that they do express about it, there's concern. I think that there's a lot of confidence in the fact that they, our great civil leaders, are going to grandfather all those who are currently serving. So I think that the active force right now is even less concerned because they have that level of confidence. They know that they swore to raise their hand, and they've already been committed to the pay and compensation of which they were given or at least agreed to when they – and our great civil leaders have also stressed the same thing. So I think that's what drives down the concern on that personally. I think my bigger concern is the effect that it's going to have on accessions. Simply is, you know, there's not a lot of pay and compensation for a soldier in the United States Army. I think it's adequate. I do. I think it's adequate with regards to, you know, the mission they have and the things they need to do to take care of your family. But I think a misperception by the American public that there's a loss in that compensation may devalue the thought of service. And that's something, to be honest with you, right now that we can't afford.
On the civilian side, agencies, not just DOD, but others, are struggling with retention just as much as they are with recruitment. I see consistently the recruitment numbers look to be pretty good for all of the military branches. What's your sense of whether you're going to be able to continue to do the things that you need to do to keep the people in that you want to stay in, given the downsizing, given the discussions on the Hill about budgets and all of those kinds of things?
Yeah. I would tell you, recruitment, our numbers are okay. But it is, we're finding it more complex every day. It's increasingly complex to be able to meet the mission. What I mean by meeting the mission is not just assessing people in the military, but maintaining a standard quality that we need to maintain in order to give the taxpayers their best soldier. We really do. And my fear is that we may have to wane off that standard, and that's something we simply cannot do. We need a quality of standard of individual that wants to serve that's consistent with what we have now so we can maintain that readiness I talked about just shortly. But from the standpoint of your question with regards to how we're retaining talent is also critically important, and we keep our pulse on this. I think that in the past when we've done drawdowns, we weren't probably as focused as we should be on just that talent. We did some things after Desert Storm where we offered incentives for people to leave versus using a talent-based or a assessment-based or a, you know, a looking at people's files and saying who is the best apt to stay, who has honored the profession, you know, throughout their tenure, and I think we're doing that, you know, and we call it the standards-based approach to downsizing. Blatantly, we're going to have to tell people to go home. I mean that's the truth. We are. We're hoping not to do as many of that, and we're trying to minimize that through natural attrition, through balancing accessions, which, though we can never turn off, we still have to bring young men and women from America into this great service. But we start with those who are retirement eligible. Okay, so we soften the blow with regards to the effects on family because they've earned those retirement benefits, and we do that through a quality base. So we look at those MOSs and those skills that are overstrength within our Army right now, and then we look at them, and we have their peers assess their files and say, you know, who are the ones that we should separate first. The other thing, too, is we have to not lose talent mid-stride because we lose a lot of individuals through natural attrition. You know, many of our soldiers attrit on their own from the service within their first or second tour. Obviously, we want to keep talent, and that's our job. And we want to keep the best there is, and we want to incentivize those who stay. So we got to create opportunities for them to move up. Because in a time now when you're having to cut individuals, your promotion system could stagnate, and it's important that we keep a pulse on that as well. So we're taking a look at some other measures now. So we're looking at time and service requirements, reducing them to where they were when we first started this war. We raised them to help retain more people in the time that we needed. We need to bring them back down to put those things back in balance so we're not keeping senior people longer, thereby preventing our young go-getters, per se, to be able to move up.
You mentioned at the beginning of our conversation the world's very complex. Are you comfortable, confident that if you needed to scale up for some unforeseen reason that presents itself 2 to 5 years from now, that you'd be able to do that in time to meet that threat?
I'm comfortable with our level of readiness for the threat assessment today. I'm uncomfortable with the future. I am. And that's very complex. And that's a prediction, I think, that we all wish we could make with 100% certainty. So there is a margin of error. There will always be a margin of error in that prediction. We've heard the chief and the secretary of the Army be very consistent with regards to any further reductions to the Army would essentially put unnecessary risk against what we have to do, or at least what we may be called to do. My fear is, as we increase in complexity, we can't get away from the fact that we can't continue to decrease in size, or in resourcing. Because consistent resourcing, or non-consistent resourcing for that matter, has a significant effect on our ability to build readiness, irregardless of the number of troops we have. If we can't maintain their readiness levels, then we'll not be prepared to do our mission. And that's what worries me. I'm uncomfortable with the size of the Army in the future right now. Hopefully, that uncomfortability will never go anything beyond that. But again, I think I'm also uncomfortable with our ability to be able to project as an American force to our adversaries that we are ready to. Do I have the confidence in this nation and our great leaders to be able to build our Army back up to what we need when we need to? Absolutely. We have done it. They have demonstrated time and time again, and they will give us what we need when we need to be able to accomplish the mission. There's some uncertainty. There is.
Certainly is. We've reported at our station on the Force of the Future effort that is being undertaken, led by Undersecretary Carson. How do you see any effort like that, whether it's that specific effort or another, being kind of the overarching framework that you and General Milley use to figure out how to move the Army forward?
Yeah, first and foremost, I applaud it. I think change is positive. It's necessary at every echelon. It's okay to shake things up a while. And what Secretary Carson has done as an extension of what he's done here in the Army is led that. Okay. So, and in its initial stages, it just gets us talking about it. It's the thinking about change. It's exploring future possibilities that otherwise, if you didn't take the time or forced, you would never look at. I think there's going to be some great outcomes. I think that we still have a lot of work to do from a multi-service perspective. Not everything's a DoD fit, but I think it's the right direction. I think we have to constantly evolve. If we had not changed since the 50s, we would not be the formidable force that we are throughout the world. That requires change in many facets, not just from a military's perspective, not just the new gadget on a thing, but people. The Army that's largely what it is. And war is just that too. It's a conflict between at least two individuals, humans, and you have to be able to, develop, lead, train, educate, and manage the future force. And if you don't constantly evolve, we just won't stay ahead.
Beyond the debate on the size, the number of soldiers in uniform, and the readiness issue that we've discussed already, what's the major impact, in your view, of the budget discussion on Capitol Hill on the force that you have right now, sir?
That's a tough one. I mean, so there's obviously there's a monetary impact with regards to the resources that we need. Consistency, we have always said, is most important. From a soldier perspective, I'd just like to tie it back to something we talked about earlier, and that's the perception of the American people and maintaining the same level of support with regards to service in this great Army and our great military is. Every time we talk, every time we bring it up, it unless it's a positive aspect, it has the opposite, a negative effect on that. And I think all these things and all this controversy over whether or not we have enough resource requirements, whether or not we're going to make changes to the military pay and compensation reform, all have an effect on the perception of the American people about military service. I don't know what that is. I hope it's positive. I need it to be. I need soldiers. I need the best the American people have to offer.
I see that I'm getting close to my time, and I apologize for that. Role play for a moment for the final question, if we may. You're sitting across the table from a young 18, 19-year-old Dan Daly in Palmerton, Pennsylvania. What do you tell him about getting into the Army that he probably doesn't know?
Yeah. One thing. Do it again. Twice. Do it twice. Wouldn't do anything else. Just wouldn't. I always wanted to be a soldier. That's all I ever wanted to be. That's what I got to be. And there's not a whole lot of money. Nobody has enough money. That would have changed that. It's given me something that you can't buy. It's offered me things and shown me things that you can't purchase on a shelf in America. You can't go to the movie theater and watch, and you can't rent on the weekend. And it's taught me things that I would never learn before, and I won't give any of that back.
Thank you for your service, and thank you for your time today, sir.
Thank you.